Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily, and usually, represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and its underwriters. And now, today's program. My guest today is Chris Hively. You may know Chris from his ventures like the Startup Factory and Launchbox Digital, or from his media presence. He has been quoted in major national and international outlets, including Forbes, The Washington Post, TechCrunch, Crain's Business Journal, Huffington Post, Tech Cocktail, and The Financial Post. He has also appeared in major market TV stations across the U.S. He was featured in the documentary Startup Land, which showcased the world's most renowned entrepreneurs and startup experts. He is a contributing writer for Inc.com. His 30 years plus years of diverse experience covers a broad range of senior positions in government sector, Fortune 150 global companies, multiple startups, and as a venture capital investor. His 56 years of wisdom and 30-year-old energy has been noted by many people, and Chris has been continuing his personal and career ventures. In the fall of 2015, Chris released Build the Fort, his much-anticipated book about how to take the lessons you learned as a 10-year-old and apply them to anything that you're starting. And that was based on his widely acclaimed TED Talk that he did in 2014. Chris, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me.
It's fun to explore the startup world, and it comes from so many different directions, and people are playing in it. And this area is just an incubator for all kinds of incubators and startups. And so explain how you decided to get into that and what happened with the Startup Factory and where you're going with the startup world.
Why did I get into it? I don't think it's much of a choice. I think you have the DNA to kind of be a rule breaker, kind of changer person. Turns out I've been like that most of my life, and I am just that kind of person. I think we all have some element where we, as we go through our world, we say like, that could be better.
Right.
Most of us stop there.
Right.
I don't stop there. I'm like, all right, I got to do something about it.
Because even if it's not broke, you want to break it because it could be better.
It could be better.
Right.
And so either something needs to be fixed or there's an opportunity for it to be better than it is today. And, you know, obviously I can't work on all of them.
Right.
But certain ones continue to fester and in my brain until I have to do something. And one of the things I'll share with you and your audience is that as an entrepreneur, I believe it's inherent in our DNA that we want to help other entrepreneurs.
Right.
Because we've been helped in our kind of formative stages of our entrepreneurship journey. And so being able to, you're always doing that. You're always, you know, someone's always coming to you saying, hey, I want to run something by you. The Startup Factory is just the formalization of that activity and saying, all right, what if we could do that as a business, as a factory even,
right?
And, you know, have people come in, give them a little bit of money to help them kind of get off the ground and kind of launch their company, and then surround them with the area's best mentors. Like, that's what you're doing anyway, but now I'm formalizing it.
Right. And so the Startup Factory operated for how many years here in this area, and then why did you decide to sort of pull the plug?
Sure. Well, the Startup Factory is organized like a venture fund, and venture funds are organized with basically, you raise money from investors who would love to see you put that money into play better than they can.
Right.
And so when you raise a venture fund, you have a certain amount of time and a thesis and kind of a way that you're going to go to do business. So Dave Neal, my partner, and I raised money back in 2011 for a four-year run from 2012 through 2015. We raised a little over $6.5 million. And our formula was that we would invest in 5 to 6 companies at
okay.
a time.
Right.
Those companies would come into our space. We'd kind of bring all these mentors in to kind of help them on a volunteer basis, by the way. And we would do that twice a year for 4 years. Net, we ran 7 cohorts over
okay.
4 years, invested in 35 companies. And so at the end of 2015, when we said, what do we want to do next? I think the most exciting thing about the area is that it had matured greatly.
Right.
We were pretty much the only game in town for seed investment capital and mentorship.
Right.
Now, universities have entrepreneurship programs.
They're popping up like popcorn. I mean, it's just everywhere.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. Like that's, you
right.
know, I mean, some people may view that as, well, geez, we can't do the same thing we were doing. No. I mean, we have to evolve. The communities have evolved. So Dave and I set out to raise a larger fund that would have a larger impact.
Right.
And the impact would be greater than just RTP. And the impact would also be deeper into the journey. So not only would we do the seed investment, the $50,000, but we would do hundreds of follow-on, you know, hundreds or 200 right. or 500. And it proved that raising that fund was harder than we would have thought in 2016 for lots of reasons, maybe.
Right. Well, and I go around the country and I've talked to so many venture capitalists that were in it for 20 or 30 years, and they sort of said, it's no longer what it was. These issues and these venture firms that had been around forever doing this funding just said, no, something shifted. It's too hard. It's not working the same way. This isn't what we're going to do anymore. And so many venture firms just pulled back at that point and said, yeah, we're going to have to step back and look at something else.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what you should be doing as a smart business right. person, right? Anyway, always evaluating, you know, your competitive advantage. And what Dave and I said is, listen, this is the minimal, this is what our area needs next.
Right.
That's what we're going to go for. And if we can't do that, then...
get a go, no-go decision.
It's a go, no-go. Yeah. And I think both Dave and I are not, you know, 20-year-old kids.
Right there with you.
Yeah. We're, you know, we also want to choose what inspires us. And so in kind of a go big or go home... when we couldn't get to the level of amount of money that we wanted to raise to kind of execute the plan we wanted right. to execute, we said, let's fold up and
do something else.
Do something else.
Well, and that's that entrepreneurial mind. It's not a failure. It's a doorway
absolutely
to the
not.
Next thing, right? It's the, well, we're testing us. The market accepts it. The market doesn't. The market shifted. There's something else. And you're just, like, what was it? Somebody said, I think the light bulb that didn't work was invented 1,000 times, right?
Yeah.
The one that did work was the 1,001, right? And so that's
one.
Essentially what entrepreneurs do.
Yeah.
We come in, we create a program, even if it's within our same business. I do this on it. I create a program, test it out in a market. Usually I pick the toughest market around for it. If it's going to fly there, it's going to fly other places.
Right.
And then if it doesn't work, we redesign, we try something else, we try this, we do this with our customers. And that's what it's about, being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I love to share the story that when excuse me, when Dave and I decided to kind of shut down TSF, we threw a wake, right? And we had about 200 people show up, and you know, good friends and people that we had interacted with. And the message we wanted to send is, this is not a failure, right? We want to celebrate the impact we had over the last 5 to 7 years
right.
here in the community.
And the impact it'll continue because of those companies you started.
Exactly. And the connections we made and the people, you know, from real estate to programs to the universities who all said, you know, we're going to come together and make our community bigger and better. We had a role to play in that. And now let's figure out what our next role is going to be. And, you know, that's kind of exciting to do. And, you know, that's not to say we weren't disappointed.
Right.
But it's not a failure. And I'm not going to, you know. Shutting down the 1,000 light bulbs, you know, one of those light bulbs, all right? Well, it burned bright for a while, and now we need to build a different light bulb.
Well, and it's dynamic. I mean, because our businesses don't stay the same. It may be a regulatory change. It may be a Google. It may be Apple. It may be something outside our businesses that change and shift the marketplace. And there's a life cycle. Businesses start, businesses struggle, businesses fail, or businesses yeah. grow, reinvent themselves, and continue on.
They have certain lifetimes, right?
Right.
Some of them are days, some of them are months, some of them might be years, but yeah, oh well. The
so
journey continues.
The journey continues. So what is that next step in that journey? So what are you taking from the startup factory experience to whatever this next thing is?
Well, one of the things that's always interested me, I mean, I probably allocated too much of my time locally to spending time on community building
right.
type of activities. But one of the ideas that I had is that what if I could do as much for other communities in the Southeast than I have done and helped with kind of the RTP Raleigh-Durham area. Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Apex, Mooresville, right?
Yeah, the larger triangle.
Yeah, because
yeah.
guys outside this area, they don't view us as Durham or Chapel Hill or Mooresville,
no.
right? Or Cary.
Right.
We're just
the triangle.
The triangle
yeah.
or RTP if you're a little older.
Yeah.
Right? So Which, by the way, we have to continue to remember that our strength is that we're one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas.
63 people a day moving in.
In the country, right? We expect to be adding 1 million people between 2015 and 2025. And, you know, all the things we know about three great large universities, lots of really good small, you know, smaller universities and, you know, all those things. People view us as one thing.
Right.
So that's, by the way, our, you know.
That's our strength and our weakness.
That's our strength. And if we stopped, you know, sibling rivalry stuff, we would all be better off because that's wasted energy.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're all preaching to the choir.
We're all preaching from the same hymnal.
Well, I know when I did programs around here, and I've said it before, if I decided to rent something closer to Raleigh, it was like no one would drive past exit 273 on that, you know. And so you were doing the same event four or five times because it was sort of that sibling rivalry of, well, that's not a Durham program or that's not a Raleigh program. It's like, no, it's the Triangle.
Yeah. You know, and well, the first name, I mean, we were originally the Triangle Startup Factory, and then we shifted to the Startup Factory.
Right.
And the reason we did that is we started seeing about 55% of the companies wanting to come through our program were coming from outside of North Carolina, and they didn't know what this triangle thing
right.
was, right? So we dropped it and just went to the Startup Factory, which is kind of cute because they could still call it TSF.
Right. You didn't have to change the logo.
No logo changes, you know. Excuse me. So, you know, that's really... that kind of community building, that was always a fun part to be involved in. I'm eventually going to get to your answer. But, you know.
You got to give the background.
Helping to bring, like, MoogFest here.
Right.
Which is going to be held in May and was a fantastic event. You know, everyone should look into it. There's free pieces. There's paid pieces. It's not just music. The daytime programming is about technology and future and you know, one of the things that one of my favorite sessions that I sat in was the screenwriter, and I'm going to forget the actress's name, but one of the actresses in Hidden Figures.
Right.
And they were there talking about this movie that was going to be coming out in January, right? So there's a little plug for MoogFest, May 18th or
something. There's bound. So if they Google MoogFest, they'll find MoogFest Durham.
Yeah. 10,000 people, yeah. You know, from. 20, I think something like 30 different states and 13 different countries all come to this thing.
Right.
And so anyway, being involved in those community development things kind of makes me smile. One of my ideas was, can I help Richmond and Norfolk, Virginia,
right.
and Wilmington and Columbia, South Carolina? And it turns out there's about 15 communities of that size all within 4 hours of
right.
Durham. I'm like, you know, we were talking about travel. I'm like, all right, I can get in a car for a couple
hours. If it's 8 hours or less, I drive it just
yeah.
because it's going to spend that much time in the airport.
So think so 4 hours or less,
right.
even better,
yes.
right? And I started to develop some interesting workshops. For instance, like an idea workshop. How do you get, you know, I know that most of us are walking through the day going, ding, oh, that would be a great idea. How do you take that idea and do something with it?
Right.
Most of us don't know how. And because of that, or maybe there's fear, we stop short of that. That's what the book's about, right?
Right.
How do you kind of start? How do you take? So I was like, what if I could go into a community? What if I can go into Greensboro and say, all right, you know, you're interested. Let's put 25 people in a room. I'll walk you through a 3 or 4 hour workshop and help you figure out how to get, you know, for those who are motivated, get that idea out there. So
but
really.
That's something that's important to point out for those that are motivated. Because you're going to get those 1,000 no's. And if you take those no's, or you get afraid at some point.
Or believe them.
Or believe them, right. Yeah. They don't know what they're talking about. They said no. It's just, they just don't get it. If you don't keep going, then you're never going to get to the light bulb that worked.
So, well, let me ask you a question. So, have you had an idea today of something?
Yeah. That's why there's like 3 or 4 notebooks laying everywhere, and then I'm putting them down, and it's
right.
like this. And so I'm always capturing them, and I'm doing that with the clients. So we take their ideas, help them patent them or whatever, and then we're
right.
executing and trying to license them and those kind of things. But we get those ideas, and we get them protected and everything. But once I get the patent, that's all there is to it. You know, it's just going to be millions rolling it. No, there's the next step to taking
that's
the next step, and then there's the next step, and it's those kind of things.
So when you talk to clients or people that you run into, you know, what do you think why do you think most people don't even take the first action or the first step to do something with that idea?
Well, it comes, a lot of them is that it's the mentality of, part of it's fear, but part of it isn't, it's not the fear that it won't work. It's the fear of what everybody else will think. Yeah. And I did a workshop over in Winston-Salem, and I tell them, it's like everybody else is too afraid and too busy worrying about what someone's going to be thinking about what they're doing to worry about what you've actually succeeded or failed at. So it's more, what will it do to my reputation?
Yeah.
Or I'm used to the paycheck. I'm so, you know, I have to have the paycheck to pay my mortgage or whatever. Right. And in my corporate career, I always kept what we called a go-to-hell fund.
Yeah.
So that in finance, there were frequently times there were things that you needed to say no to. And if you were in the position that you couldn't say no, you were going to end up going to hell.
Right.
Or you needed to tell them where to go.
Right.
And so you were doing that. And so it's still that type of freedom to do that, where we're so tied to our big house, our car, our vacation home or whatever, that we're afraid to risk those assets to start a business or to go after that idea. And what if it does fail? Okay, it failed.
Yeah.
There's another idea. There's another job.
You don't die.
It's not fatal unless you let it be fatal.
Right. I spend a lot of time thinking about this because I believe there should be more entrepreneurship, not less. And I think that all of those things, from reputational risk to financial risk, to I don't know what I'm doing, or either I don't know what I'm doing, so I don't know what to do, or I'm afraid that I'm going to look silly, or...
Again, it's how everybody's going to perceive you, right?
Right. And so what I try to do is say all those things, most of those things are things you don't even have to worry about now. Let's just take the idea out of your head. Like, if it's just sitting in the notebook or sitting in the... It's wasted.
You got to brain dump it.
You got to get it out.
You got to get it out first.
And I know that everyone has at least three people they could go and talk to about this.
Right.
So what I love is saying, all right, let me just help you do the simplest of things. You're not going to quit your job. You're not going to suffer. I'm going to help you find three people that you can just share this idea with no kind of fear or inhibition. And it's amazing when you get people to do that and they realize, well, that didn't hurt really at all. Even if when they question you, those questions spark things in your mind to go, oh, I didn't think you'd think of it that way. And now you start asking more questions. You go from 3 to 5 to 25 people.
Right.
The next thing you know, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. Right?
Right.
I'm acting on this.
Well, and a lot of people think, well, if I'm going to act on the idea, it's all or nothing. I'm going to quit my day job and no, you keep the day job. That's what funds that idea.
Exactly.
And you do it after hours. It's, you know, you're doing different things. And even if you're going to start a business, as long as it doesn't violate your agreement with your current employer for who owns the intellectual property and things like that, then you run parallel because that's the only thing that makes sense because you have to have funds to fund that idea.
And by the way, along the lines, all you're trying to do is find validation points that this idea actually kind of makes sense. And whether it's just figuring out like how to get to a small prototype, whether it's, you know, maybe just helping a client 2 hours on the weekend or whatever the business is, right? There's not a business out there that you can't test without actually having to do the thing, right? There's always a way to kind of get some feedback, which gives you confidence, get some validation, and maybe even some of your first customers.
Well, and you said something there that I tell my clients something, you said it, as long as it makes sense, right? But sometimes products don't make sense in the current environment or for whatever it's going to be. It's going to be a fad or a trend product, but it's going to make a lot of money. It's going to be a seen on TV. It's going to be a pet rock. Some people listening probably don't know what a pet rock is. But I just aged myself again.
Yeah.
But there are things that change the marketplace so much that it doesn't make sense. And say, who would ever have thought we wanted Google? And now Google's a verb, right? We don't do an internet search. We Google something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that environment of what is it you're thinking about, document of, like you're saying, work through the idea, get people to ask questions, get people to try to break the concept, challenge it, and then start it down the process to the point that someone wants to buy it.
And by the way, there's no limitations to that. Everyone can do that, whether you're 15 or whether you're 50.
I've worked with some 10-year-old entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I had two of them at the same time at one of the events that was around here. No one signed up to be on their team, and I was actually sponsoring the event. So I was like, okay, I'll take you both if you don't mind. And then going through it, and they had some really good ideas because it was targeting their age group.
Right. And who knows better what that age group needs than...
I certainly don't understand it.
That they left us a long time ago.
But they have no fear.
Yeah.
And that's like you're saying, the 10-year-old, the 5-year-old doesn't fear getting hurt, sliding down the slide, or flying really high in the swing, or doing whatever it is that they're going to do. Right. And we start disconnecting.
Build a fort.
Plug that book. No. We don't think about the no's until we start getting into, I'm going to say, into formal education systems that tell you, you have to learn this way.
Right, right.
Or you have to behave this way. Or no, don't go outside of those boundaries. And you were probably difficult in school. I was a little bit difficult in school. Because
that hasn't stopped.
It hasn't stopped, no. Because you look at the system, and I remember going to grad school, and I did 3 concentrations during my, and the program called me and says, you can't do that. I said, well, the computer lets me. I want to. And they said, well, everybody's going to think you don't know what you want to do. I said, or they're going to think I know exactly what I want to do, right? And so it's going and breaking the system. And I was called the dynamite kid at Ford because if it wasn't working, I wasn't going to tweak it. I wanted to put a new system in.
Right.
Let's blow it up, replace it, put something in that works. And that's not the normal way we look at the world.
So you and
it's normal for us.
Right. You and I are unique
yeah.
in that it's normal for us. We kind of, you know, if we had fear, it went away, or we figured out
we how embrace to it.
Bury it, right? Or we just grab it and say, yeah, I got your fear, right? So for those who maybe aren't wired like that, that's why I kind of say, you know, think like you were when you were 10. Like, you had no fear inhibition, right? You know, your buddy asks you, do you want to
jump off the cliff?
Do you want to jump off the cliff? Do you want to, like, and you just did those things.
You want to put 12 people in a 2-man canoe and go down the river?
Yeah, let's
right.
try
yeah,
it,
let's
right?
try it. What's yeah. going to happen?
But, like, that kind of sensibility, that's why I tell people, like, stop for a second, close your eyes, and try to channel a little bit of that, and maybe I can just pull you a little bit off this fear craziness
right.
that just prevents us from trying to do the things we need to do. And by the way, there's no cost other than a little bit of your time to getting started. So
what's like writing?
Do it tomorrow.
People are afraid to, you know, I have so many of the clients, they have content and they're afraid to write. And they said, well, I might not write the grammar. It's like, that's what an editor's for. It's like, just brain dump it. Just dump it out, whatever format it is. We can worry about shaping it. They said, well, what if somebody disagrees with me? I was like, good.
Perfect.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many times when I have 800 articles published, a lawyer would email me and say, well, that was wrong. I was like, well, did you notice the comma? The comma makes it mean this, or that was, and then you start these dialogues back and forth, and that's
Which
engaging.
Is great. Yeah,
that's engagement, and so that builds your reputation. And so, what if you were wrong? So, yeah, I was wrong, and this is why this person pointed this out, and it's a whole other article, right? It's not being afraid to take that criticism yeah. or let somebody see it.
So I write for Inc. Magazine. I've
right.
written a book, write on my blog, and I failed freshman English in college. Not a D, a full-born F. And, I love to tell a story, I got 100 and an A on all the grammar tests.
Right.
But he didn't like the...
He didn't like the way you wrote.
He didn't like yeah. the way I wrote so much that he gave me an F.
Right.
So I've been scarred since high school. I was told I couldn't write. College, I couldn't write. In grad school, I had a professor who goes, you have to learn how to write at least at a minimum level because it's grad... You know, there's not...
Right.
A, B, you know, C, you know, yeah. check in graduate school. So I learned enough to kind of get by, but here I am. I conquered that fear, and I just said, "The hell with everyone!" Right? I'm going to do it, and I'm going to write, and I'm going to write more, and you know, you get okay with it.
Well, and it's you're writing in an authentic voice. People aren't. I mean, if I'm reading a book, and the guy has 3,000 letters after his name, like I do, and it's not punctuated well, or the sentences are hard to read, or whatever, they run on for 20 pages, then yeah, I'm going to notice that. But if we're talking right now. If we transcribed this wouldn't be grammatically
well,
correct.
That's how
we
I
don't
write.
Worry about it. Right. But that's how people read, yeah. too. So I know I was big in Singapore there for a while because the articles I was writing on business were something that where English was not the primary, American English, qualified it, was not the primary language. They could still get the concepts and apply them. And so we need to be less concerned about the format, which can be dealt with by paying an editor to do it. And worry about the content and
yeah.
if people can get the content. I know my last graduate degree 2 years, I guess it's been almost 2 years ago now, I would read some of the articles and some of the material and it would be like 20 times. I'd be so frustrated. And I'm diagramming sentences and I'm thinking, if I have to diagram this sentence, there's something wrong. And,
yeah.
and so then I just finally had to put it away and say, I'm just going to rip it. You know, I'm going to write it. If the professor doesn't like it, if it, you know, if it's a whatever. And it was fine because 9 times out of 10, it was still an A. And it was a different perspective, And so it was that kind of evolution. It's like, I like to write. That's one of the things God gave me. So I can't imagine not ever doing it. But when I sit down to write, I don't worry about if it's grammatically correct. There's also software that fixes that.
Right.
And so you just do it.
Yeah.
You just have to do it. And that's not how our system is producing people. I think we're getting it constrained out of us earlier, and that's why there's not more entrepreneurs.
How can you test writing?
Right.
I mean, did I communicate my idea, and did someone
get it?
Like, everything after that is just like second place, right? So that's your only goal.
It's conveying content.
Yeah.
And getting it, and that's standing in the room when you're public speaking. When we're on the radio, I used to try to script it. And I'm like, okay, one, I couldn't stick to the script like 2 seconds into the show. It was just gone. I was like, forget it. But we're talking. We're having a conversation, and you're getting it. I'm hoping the audience is getting it.
Yeah.
But that's what we're supposed to be doing with our ideas, with our businesses, with our branding, with our marketing, with what we want to share as content. And I think that's part of what's missing in the entrepreneurial equation, because we also think we can teach entrepreneurship, and there are elements of it you can teach, but it's more art than it is science.
I just love the stuff. I just think one of the other things I say in terms of the idea workshop is that everyone is an expert in something as compared to everyone else. So the other thing, if you think you have the kind of motivation to want to start something, you're not really sure what to do, start with what your hobby, or start with the thing that you're most passionate about. Because compared to everyone else, you are an expert. And you can share insights, and people want to hear that.
Well, I've seen people have, one lady I met with locally, and she had 2 businesses running on the same website, and they were drastically different. And one, I told her she needed to separate them just because they had no relationship to the other. But the other thing is, she lit up when she talked about one, and literally all energy went away with the other. And I said, just leave the website that way. Just leave this one on it and get rid of this one. She goes, what do you mean get rid of it? I said, you have no passion, nothing for this. I said, if you focus on this one that you're passionate about, that you light up about, you can just see it and the energy goes up. I said, you talk about this one and it's just a drain. I said, and you don't have the resources to build both.
Right.
So let's move the one that you're doing it because you think it's going to give you the paycheck, and do the one that you're passionate about, that you can make really happen, devote your resources to it. And that's where the money will come from, because you are passionate about it.
So I am passionate. As I'm sitting on my therapy couch here, I am passionate about entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial communities. And that's what I've spent the last 7 years doing. And I'm going to figure out ways to help entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial communities optimize their journey.
Their opportunities. Yeah. So that's the next step. It's a new startup factory. It's a new, what is it?
So I'm going to be working with an existing organization, first time in 15 plus years that I'm not the captain of my...
But you're not going to be wearing a tie and a suit.
No. Still going to be poorly dressed as I was before, as I wear t-shirts and...
Khakis.
So I'm working with an organization that was one of the organizations that, to me, kind of invented the model of the accelerator model, of which the Startup Factory is one. It's an organization called Techstars, and I'll be working with them to help figure out a set of products and services that we can bring into communities who have the motivation and the passion to build a startup ecosystem, but maybe don't know the steps.
They don't know how the steps. Yeah.
Don't know the steps.
The starting point.
It's an unbelievable opportunity. It's a global opportunity. And one of the things that we've observed is that every community wants to go to the next step and don't know how. And I think there's more communities than less that don't know how to kind of get their kind of activities organized and kind of what a roadmap might look like. I have one experience here in the Triangle, but working with David Cohen and Brad Feld, who's written the book on this subject called Startup Communities, and we'll be working together, the three of us, to kind of figure out how can we go into, as I say, from Boise, Idaho to Bogota, Colombia.
Well, it's going to be interesting because what my experience working with in some economic development projects and things is that when we get in there, it's breaking their paradigm too of their fear of if we change this, what happens? Because it's a larger scale of the community itself becoming the entrepreneur. So if we have to change this rule, what does that mean? Or can we do that? Or no, what if we do this? Or what if somebody says we wasted this? What if it doesn't? you're going to be doing the thing that you would do with one entrepreneur, with the community having that fear and those obstacles.
The community is the startup,
yes.
Right? So you got team dynamics, you have kind of assets, you have weaknesses, voids that need to be filled, organizational things. I mean, these are all the same problems that a startup goes through when they're kind of coming together.
With multiple personalities. With
multiple personalities. And,
and so is it going to be teaming with a government entity? Is it teaming with, how is this dynamic, you think, going to play out? So is it like, let's say, Person County, Roxborough saying, come in and do it, or Boise, Idaho city government coming in, or is it somebody in the community, a chamber of commerce? Who is going to bring you in? Is it different? What's the expectation?
The answer is yes.
All
of the above. And I think every community is a little bit different, right? Different communities have different strengths. You know, one of the thesis that I've lived and that my new partners live is that communities kind of grow from the ground up, not typically from some kind of oversight group, government,
right,
university, whatever entity. It's the kind of the, you know, accumulation or aggregation of kind of leaders who are passionate, and entrepreneurs have to be part of that equation. So, for instance, here I worked pretty closely with the Durham Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
Now, if anybody ever would have told me years ago that I'd be working with the Chamber of Commerce, I would have told them to pass the cigarette, right, because they were smoking way too much stuff. However, Casey Steinbacher, who was the Durham Chamber president, got it, right?
Right.
And so, you know, how do we kind of find the influencers in the communities that have the right attitude and kind of, you know, the right kind of idea about how do you come together to make something happen? And that answer is going to be different in different communities, who those people are, finding them, and then kind of doing an assessment about kind of what do they have that are their strengths. So a good example is that a lot of communities today run this thing called a startup weekend.
Right. Been to those. Sponsored those.
Yeah. It turns out there's about 880 a year run around the world. So if you're a community who's never run one and it's totally volunteer-based, like there's a you know, a template and a model for how do you do this, the organization, Startup Weekend people, will come in and kind of show you how to do it. You just have to have the motivation to kind of bring your community together. If you've already running two or three a year, well, that means you're that far up, but what else should you be doing? And so that's kind of the fun, right?
Right,
go figure out who the people are, and I'm going to view them each as little startups, and how can I come in and advise them, not unlike the advice that I've been giving to my startups that I invested in, you know, over the last 5 years.
So how are these organizations, how are you going to identify Boise and Bogota? How are you going to find them? Are they going to find you? Is it going to be an active campaign to try to get them to hit a website? I mean, North Carolina has 100 counties, 9 of which are not disadvantaged. So is it as much a North Carolina county could do it as a Bogota, Colombia could do it?
I have no idea.
Okay.
This is day 8.
Okay.
But that's the fun of figuring out. And so it's going to be the matrix, the multidimensional matrix, the master spreadsheet that I'm in the midst of building, which kind of highlights different aspects of, I think, signals that a community would be a great candidate to work with us. Certainly there's inbound requests that we get all the time and that my partners get. So, you know, that's a signal that someone's interested. There's also kind of viewing from outside, what kind of things are they doing? Is that all of that kind of recent, or have they been doing it for a couple of years? And I think when you mash all that together, hopefully we'll come up with a short list of maybe 20 communities. And my goal this year is to, you know, get a handful that I can parachute into and roll up my sleeves and help out. And out of that will come a lot of insights.
Well, I hope the audience, the listeners, actually heard you say, well, I don't know. Because I think that is something most organizations, most communities, most experts have a struggle saying, well, I don't know yet, and I'm going to figure it out. And that's the difference between the entrepreneurial method of it and someone that is saying, well, I can't admit I don't know something. I need to be all knowing. If that's a weakness to say I don't know. But it's a strength. in the environment that we operate in to say, I don't know, let's figure it out.
It's a must piece of your personality if you're going to be a good entrepreneur, is the ability to go, I don't know, and admit it publicly so that others can come and help you. Because if you think you have to learn everything on your own, that means you're wasting time.
Right.
That means you're not learning from other people. And time is the biggest thing that kills a company, or lack of time.
Well, yeah, because it's like we have so much capital, we have so much time. If we take too much time, we run out of capital.
Yeah.
And that equation just...
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, we have to balance, and the more capital we have, the faster we can move. And those two relationships. But that's what I see with so many organizations is they have the capital and they just think, well, I can take my time and something changes in the market or something unexpected didn't work in the technology and now they need to start over, but the capital's gone.
Yeah.
And it's, you have to move quickly while you have the
resources. And I think the best way to move quickly is to utilize other people's experiences. And, you know, go back to what I said, it's inherent in the DNA of an entrepreneur that there's a give back component. So if you have a question about something and you don't have a group of people that you can reach out to for a coffee or a 10-minute phone conversation and say, I'm struggling with this thing, I'm not sure what to do, like that's how you save time versus festering or trying to learn by experiences, you know, and 3 to 6 months later, it's 3 to 6 months later and you've wasted all of that time.
Well, and it's in your book, it's Build the Fort, and they can find it on Amazon and they just look up Build the Fort on Amazon. But it's, you're right, it's those things that we start taking on as the mantle of being an adult, of being an expert or something, that we stop asking for help. We stop saying, well, I don't know. I don't know how to do it. Somebody show me. We have that as a kid. We know we're in the learning mode. As adults, we're always in the learning mode too, hopefully. And so we're not constraining ourselves by saying, I'm not going to ask for help. I'm not going to look
for it. It's a weird psychology. I kind of get it at some level, but... You know, I think having a healthy dose of self-awareness and being confident in that and knowing that there's people that just know more about this stuff than you do, whatever that stuff is, and like, go get it. That's part of the fear. Like, get out of your own head. It's not really about you, and go ask some other people.
Well, it's like, I can do my taxes. I drive my accountants crazy. And so, but I don't want to do them. That's not the best use of my time, and I don't enjoy doing them, so... Why don't I pay someone that likes to do them, that's their expertise, and I write the check. That's 3 or 4 hours that I'm not stressed. I'm not trying to figure out the IRS forms. I'm not fooling with it. That I'm working on my next product or working with my customer, which is why I'm in business. I'm not in business to do taxes. I'm in business to serve my customers. And so that's something I think we frequently don't make the right decisions on. If I spend money that frees up time for me to make money, if I'm working with someone that's an expert as an attorney in patent law versus me getting a book and trying to figure it out.
Right.
Those types getting of things. Those are the trade-offs.
Hours spent on the internet learning.
Well, and it's good. I tell my clients you need to know the general information to be able to make the right decisions, to know when you need to get which type of attorney to qualify people. But you're not going to be a patent lawyer if you're not already a patent lawyer. And so you need to do the things and focus your time and effort on the things that make the difference.
Right.
That matters about your product. And that's something, again, we're always told in corporate world to work on our weaknesses. What do we go take classes in? We take classes in our weaknesses. Where I think if we spend time playing to our strengths, which most entrepreneurs are good at doing because they're about their product, their technology, there's what they're there to do, then that makes a world of difference and makes us more competitive and gets us further than if we're doing the things we're already bad at.
Yeah.
So
part of the entrepreneurial journey.
It's day 8. You guys are going to be making these systems and these processes, and so you're going to stay based here in this area?
Yes.
And then you're just going to have fun, as you said, parachuting in, hopefully not literally.
Yeah, I hope not.
Into this. And so what do you expect these organizations or these groups, these areas that you're going to go into, what do they need to bring to the table? If you had to tell people that are listening now, what's the first thing they need to do if they think they want to be an entrepreneur, they have an idea? Is it that brain dump? Is it that conversation with 3 people? And then where do they go from there?
Yeah, I think my favorite thing and kind of lesson one in Build It Forward is go out and socialize your idea without fear or inhibition. And I know some of you are introverted and some of you, that's not kind of a natural bone in your body or muscle, but you got to break that. And I say start, you know, simple. Start with your spouse. Start with your family. Start with some friends.
Start with your 10-year-old.
Start with your 10-year-old. You know, start with, you know, some peers at work over lunch. And just kind of get it out, right? Like, it doesn't have to be organized. I'm not saying write a PowerPoint presentation, just tell the story. And, you know, as an example, when I started the Startup Factory here, I'd lived in Chapel Hill. We lived in Chapel Hill for about 8.5 of the 11 years that we've been here. But I was running a company for 2 years, so I never got out.
Right.
I didn't know anybody.
I resemble that remark.
Yeah. But when I started thinking about the Startup Factory, after reading about Y Combinator and Techstars, the models for for these programs, I said, well, geez, I better go meet lots of people. And so, and what I'm going to tell you is it's easier than you think, even for an introvert, because everyone has a story to tell. And I didn't bring a presentation, and I did 275 meetings in about 5 months, one-on-one. I was in every coffee shop, you know, from south of Raleigh to north of Durham to west of Carrboro. And everyone was a warm introduction.
Right.
Everyone said, you know who you should talk to? You guys should talk to these three people. They make a warm introduction. And what I'm going to tell you is that if someone accepts your invitation, they have as much interest in hearing what you have to say. So share it. We're talking about a half an hour coffee. And you do that 20, 25 times, you'll have a really good idea of what other people think. And out of that, you'll get a lot of feedback and ideas about what your next move should be, or whether not to do it, or to do it this but twisted 7 degrees to the left.
So, it's a great idea, and it's not for that customer. It's for this one over here that actually has the money to buy it.
Those exactly. Kind of, right, and yeah. You can't do that other than getting out and talking about it. And by the way, so I haven't built anything. I haven't even done the damn stupid PowerPoint. All I've done is figured out how to tell the story. By the way, the story will not be as good the first time as it was the 25th time. But by the 25th time, when people say, well, I don't know what you mean by that. When the third person says that, you say, huh, I don't think I'm explaining that the right way.
Right.
Let me explain that a little differently. And so the other thing that happens when you talk to the 20 or 25th person is that you have a better version of the story, and it gets crisper and tighter. And out of that, like, magics can happen. So that's what I would want everyone to go out and do tomorrow, is just share your idea.
And then you've honed that idea down. And then when is it you need to start talking to someone that can actually tell you, is this a business or is this a product? Is this, what's my next step? I have this idea. Do I need to pay somebody to make the software program or build a prototype? Or what is that next step after you've gotten that nice, concise, precise definition of your idea?
Yeah, I think so. The current thinking on this comes out of a book a couple years called Lean Startup by Eric Ries, which I highly recommend as a quick read. In fact, I probably have read it 8-9 times. When I'm on an airplane, it's on my iPad, and I'll just pick it up and
love those ebooks.
Randomly go to a page just to remind myself of the thinking. And it's more of a thinking, and it's not a how-to, but it's more of a discovery process for you as an entrepreneur. And the phrase that's come out of that some of us have heard is what's called the MVP, which is the minimal viable product. And in English, what that means is, what is the stupidest, hacked up, kind of coarse, not pretty version of this thing that I want to do that I can put in front of real customers and have them react to it?
Right.
We don't know it, but we're constantly, like Google is constantly testing. So most of us have a Gmail account today. What if I told you that Gmail was in beta, not even the final 1.0, for 5 years?
Right.
So Google kind of taught us, like, they throw like crap out there, like a website or a service, and they figure out what do you use and what do you don't use and what's important and what's not important.
I call that you have to take imperfect action, because if you wait for it to be perfect, you'll never have enough money, you'll never have enough time, and you'll never get it to the right version of the product that actually will sell.
Because guess what? Like, your fifth customer bought sometimes because you had the first four.
Right.
So, like, how do I get it in someone's hands? And even if it's not bought, like, when I can go back and say, I've had 15 people or 100 people or 1,000 people, depending on what the thing is, using this thing for this course, hacked up, kid in high school wrote the code for me, or I used I got a little 3D printing shop and I'm making really ugly versions of this thing, you know, when I get 100 people's feedback, that's another like validation kind of as you kind of go up the scale.
Right.
And every one of these kind of gives you more confidence that maybe there's a business here. And eventually when someone, ultimately, I think the ultimate test is when someone reaches in their pocket, pulls a dollar out, and says, I want this, then you have validation. When 50 people do that, almost, you know, magical, right?
Well, and it's, I know when I'm out talking to the people that have the ideas, they think the first thing they're going to do is get on Shark Tank, right? You know, oh, I'm going to go on Shark Tank. Well, one, not everybody gets on Shark Tank. And two, have you seen how many companies get on there and they're the chum? Because they're not prepared. They don't have the answers. They don't have a working prototype, or they don't have protection for it, or they don't know their numbers. And so at what point do you get the people that you're coaching to pony up and really have the plan, know their numbers, know what it's going to take, who their market is, all of those kind of things?
As soon as possible. So one of the signs that hung in the Startup Factory was traction is everything. Because traction is kind of progress, and progress is usually meant by how many customers or users or, you know, whatever that feedback thing is. And for different, you know, ideas, it could be 5 or it could be 5,000, right? If it's a little app, you better be talking to thousands of people who have actually tried it and done something with it. But as you kind of, you know, kind of scale up, as you get more and more traction, you are starting to de-risk the idea. And whether you're hiring people for equity or cash, whether you're finding investors, all the people out there that you are going to need at different parts of your journey will feel more comfortable at some stage up that traction kind of curve. And that's your job, is to build that momentum and get that traction going. Most people think, a lot of people think, maybe not most, that once they have the idea, they should go get an investor. And I can tell you, especially around here, there are very few investors. The only investor that invests on your idea is your mother or father or your family.
Or Visa, Discover, and MasterCard. And you didn't ask them, you just used the cards.
Yeah. And obviously, with, you know, outside of the Visa and MasterCards, those only people that are investing not in the idea, but they're investing in you because they love you. That's okay. That's a starting point, but that's not a real validation.
But there's also instances where, I'll go back to Shark Tank or Dragon's Den or any of those, and you can see the stories where somebody might come in with an idea that's not quite right, and they might not have the best pitch, but the sharks or the dragons decide, I'm going to invest in this person because I know the next idea he has may be the one. And so to some extent it is the confidence the investor is going to have is not only in the product or the technology, but in how you present yourself as having the information, being able to carry it forward, to get the traction,
problem
to
solve.
Do the work, to problem solve, to adapt, to know what you're going to do. Because I may find somebody that's the best idea in the world. I think it's going to be wonderful. But if I don't have confidence you're going to carry it forward and you're going to be able to execute, I'm not investing in your product unless I just want to watch you fail, and then I'll take the product because I put the investment in. And that's not the mentality you want.
So let's bring that back kind of full circle. So what you're saying is that some investors may not invest in this idea, but maybe they'll invest in your next idea. And the reason they did that is because you build a relationship with them and they've watched you and your actions over time. And you can't do that unless you go out and socialize that idea the first time.
Right.
So,
because you will see investors say no to this one, but bring me back your next one.
Right. Or even if they don't say it, you're going to go back to them with your next idea. And you start to build a relationship and give them confidence that you're the dude or dudette or dudess, right? And
I think we're all dudes now. I think they've gotten rid of there's actors and
you're a good entrepreneurial actor.
Yeah.
Again, you can't get any of this unless you get it out of your head and get out and connect with people.
So we get the idea, we start getting that concept, we get that MVP, we start making a plan, we start quantifying what we need as if what next?
Well, obviously, different paths for different ideas, and sometimes raising money and getting some money into the business is a critical part. That's the world that I've lived mostly in on both sides of the money equation. I've raised money for my own ideas, and I've dispersed money as a venture capitalist. Your goal is the idea of money is to help you accelerate your idea faster than you could without the money.
Right.
Certainly there's nights and weekends and cobbling together friends and different people and, you know, convincing people to build you prototypes, again, physical or not, as you kind of scale up that journey. But at some point you're going to say, all right, I want some money to go faster. And so one of the things are, you know, if you're thinking that's on your path, you need to start talking to, you know,
build those relationships,
and you may not need them today, but you may need them 3 to 6 months from now. And what's really cool is that, you know, most investors love you to bring their idea, even if they're not ready for it, because they want to see the progress that you make over time. And when you update them every 4 to 8 weeks with, like, guess what, I just got another customer, or I built the MVP, and now I went from 5 to 15, and they're using my thing every day or every week, whatever that thing is, and that kind of how you engage with it, like, at some point, most investors will get to a point where they go, all right, that's real, and I'd like to be involved. There are plenty of resources out there to kind of figure out how to do this. I blog about this a lot, because people usually try to start too early in thinking about money, or you can start early, but having expectations that they're actually going to be able to close a deal earlier than they're ready for.
Or it's too expensive at the point that they've closed it. They give up over half their company for a little bit of money, and they start.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, too.
That only happens on Shark Tank.
I've had to recover a few companies that have done that.
Yeah.
You suddenly realize they've given up 51% of the business or more.
Well, there's plenty of people out there, if you're socialized idea, who will kind of share with you best practices. There's plenty of blogs. And
your blog is where?
At Hively.com, Hivly.com.
And so that's going to give them all the insights that of your experience that's beyond the Build the Fort book, which they can get on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, I just, and the articles at Inc. Magazine, they just say, write what you see. And so, you know, obviously I've done about 42 investments through the accelerator, the two accelerators, Launchbox and Startup Factory, bunch of, you know, angel investments myself. And yeah, you just see kind of, you know, best practices. You know, again, I can't go to a lunch anywhere in this area and probably not see somebody who's sharing an idea or trying to get some insights from another entrepreneur. And so the money raising thing is a little hard. It should be. It's not, you know, everything. This isn't Little League baseball, where everyone gets a trophy and everyone gets funded. Great ideas with great entrepreneurs get funded. And average ideas with average probably don't.
But average ideas with great entrepreneurs can get funded too.
They can.
Because it's the great entrepreneur that'll make the difference.
Yeah. And good investors will find that person. So, but, you know, you can learn a lot about how to kind of fundraise. By the way, you know, fundraising isn't just from, you know, formal institutional investors. They can be from, you know, there's an organization called NC Idea, which gives, you know, 10 to 15 grants a year of $40,000 to $50,000, and that's a grant. You don't take any equity, but you go on their website and you file an application. And
the government has the Small Business Innovation Research and Technology Transfer Research Grants.
Right. Friends and family, you know, sometimes you
business plan competitions.
Competitions, pitch competitions. A lot of times your first customer will find a way to fund you, right? By, you know, paying for something before you have it ready, because they want to be the first. There's lots of ways to get
crowdfunding,
get money into the business if you work hard enough. This is one of the, you know, kind of gates of an entrepreneur, is that you go out and gather that information and figure out what's best for you and your company.
And I want to thank you, Chris, for being on the show today. And they can read your blog at Hively, Hivly.com. You're joining TechStars.
Yes.
This is day 8, so we'll be keeping an eye on that to see those types of things coming out. And just want to say thanks for all the things you've been doing in the community, and we can't wait to see what the new communities look like.
Thanks,
out
Lee.
There. And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things. They have to get there.
Working for